AAC meeting, Monday, March 7th, 2016.
Effective method of communication for the access community. And the original suggestions that we had were accepted, applauded by Mr. Troop, and we're trying to move forward on it, but since we know that Mr. Troop has resigned, I think it's important that we follow up as a committee with his successor. There's now an interim replacement for Mr. Troop, and then he'll be replaced full time. So I think it's important that we send a separate communication about the communications to the interim director of rail activity.
Okay. Very good, because I know those were brought up and those were also discussed in the report. Additions to the report. Do I have a motion to accept the report as written?
I make a motion that you accept it as written.
Second.
Good. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? And those abstaining? Thank you. Duly noted.
Can I add one thing, Mr. Chairman? Just a real quick point. I wanted you to approve your board report, but if the point Dr. Phil was just talking about, mm-hmm. Dr. Postman was just talking about, is about the locked gates, is that what you're referring to?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it wasn't. It was coming up with an effective communication system for station managers to people who have...
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. Never mind, man.
I was just going to ask you, Phil, to elaborate on that so we make sure we had it right. Good. So we're good on that? Good.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll do a follow-through on that. Appreciate that. Okay. That's the way I had interpreted that, too. We now are on the public comment period. Do we have anyone from the audience who would like to address the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have six people from the audience, so I'm going to start to call each one of them. And if there any, if somebody else, please wait until they will finish this folks first. Thank you.
Each person has
3 minutes.
3 minutes. There you go. That was a quiz. Okay.
Daphne Burley. Please.
Hello, my name is Dolly Burley, and I have a complaint about Metro Ashland, because every time on Fridays they come late and they don't pick me up on time, but I try to get an earlier trip because my son is really sick, and they didn't give me an earlier trip, but I still get home a little bit late. My mother get upset with me because I get on late because my child says they pick me up on time.
Hello.
Now it's just mic on.
Yeah.
Thank you. No autographs. So three questions, really, really quick ones. One, about a couple of months ago, I made a suggestion about editing the station information page so that the specific routes that serve the given subway station will be listed hyperlinked so that screen readers will better be able to access it. It helps them improve usability and things like that. I wanted to see if I can get an update on that. I also sent information to Dave Schaffer about an agency called the Passiello Group, which actually assesses websites for accessibility. So that may be something from a proactive standpoint that Metro may want to consider. Finally, it's been brought to my attention with regard to the 7000 series rail cars that there's approximately 100 rail cars, new 7000 series rail cars that Metro has, and we still are working on trying to fix the internal stop announcement issue. I wanted to see if both the bus rail subcommittee could respond based on their. They could identify their recommendations that they gave to Metro regarding the external stop announcements, and for access services staff, whether there's a plan to modify the external stop announcements in an effort to improve the customer experience.
Ms. Blake? Mr. Blake here?
Yes, I'll respond to those once we complete public comment.
Okay, great. Okay, because I think we've got a couple of those we can respond to. Okay.
We continue then with the next person, please. Chris Barners. Close to
the other. Hello, I'm Chris Barnes. I just wanted to follow up on the escalator or elevator announcements. I honestly feel like staff did address the issue, but I wanted to provide the feedback that it's not happening. And the situation at Fort Totten has been doubled because the elevator at Tacoma is now out of repair. So I know there's a lot going on with regard to, well, everything, literally everything here. So maybe if there's some kind of process, a script or something you can provide the train operators, whatever works for them to help the riders. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. So, can I ask your personal question? Chris, are we on here tomorrow night at 6?
We are, yes.
Good.
That's budget and finance for the RAC. Everyone's welcome.
It's like a full room place.
And you can sleep on it.
Okay, we move with the next person, please.
Thank you, Chris.
Leo Orleans.
Page 3 of the minutes from February 1st, Mr. Kent is reporting on ability drives. Makes reference to the fact that additionally, Metro's board has hired a consultant to identify efficiency opportunities across the agency, including Metro Access. If that McKinsey study is the efficiency study referred to, is being used in part as a predicate for ability drives, it should be made public. And it's my understanding thus far that the McKinsey report is not publicly available, but in fact, if it's being used as a predicate for ability drive, it should be. I would hope that Mr. Kent would see that it is made available. Thank you.
Maybe we can address that. We have a portion on the ability drive. Hopefully that can be your question will be addressed during that segment, though.
Next person, Haiti Gates, please.
Yes. es como se dice en México, Haiti, ¿sí? So you heard me in the background. I think it's a really poor choice to put two elevators in a row completely out of service for 3 to 4 months. It creates lots of difficulties. And again, I know that has been hands off anyone giving feedback around that, ahead of time. But again, I think they made another poor decision related to that. How do you get from the green light to the red light to get to Silver Spring to transfer, to get the shuttle bus to get to Tacoma, because you can't change at Fort Cotton. There's problems. My other thing to say something quickly about Metro Access, and I intended to call Allison today, but I have spoken to a couple people who have been experiencing extended trips. There is one woman who is literally on, I want to get the details so Allison can check, but it is reported 8 hours. They carried her around till midnight, picking her up at 4 o'clock at NRH. And another person. And sometimes that impacts aides. And hours, you know, that you thought you would be picked up and you would go home, and then your aide could go home. And then now people are being charged, or if not financially, the hours subtracted from the next week's hours of service, because, again, all about Metro Access on-time performance. And last, I'm going to beat that same drum again, that 50 wheelchairs is a laughable number to even begin Abilities Ride. And I did a little data looking at Transport DC, and what I was seeing, and you guys may have other numbers, that about 8% of the trips are waves. So I don't know what your projected trips would be. And again, I think there's been an ebb and flow because of how new wheelchair accessible vehicles enter the Transport DC program. But I think we're back at a low where there are more people wanting those. And again, you know, it has not been at all trustworthy in bad weather. I was at a judiciary debate. Taxi Commission's AAC meeting, the Wednesday when that big huge storm was coming and the tornadoes and all of that that happened in Virginia, and they were like, get home, and they never came for me. So I luckily was able to get home safely, but that's even happening in D.C., so, you know, and you're doubling the distance and need. Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. It's good to see you here. Thank you for coming.
Next person, Karen Tyson.
Hi, everyone. It's good to see you. I have two things. One, this may have been brought up already in the bus rail committee, but I was wondering if on the pitch screens on the 7000 series, if broken or out of service elevators could be added. Seems like a pretty obvious thing and would be another place for people to see. So that's the first one. The second one is just to talk a bit more about Abilities Ride. I know it's going to be a topic of discussion, and I'll just get what I have to say out now, and then you don't have to listen to me. So I presented at the WMATA board meeting, submitted comments, formal comments to the request for information. And just wanted to give you a few of those. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it. I know some of the people who are at the Metro Access, the subcommittee members, have heard this, but very concerned that the current proposal suggests that telephone access may be available, but it's not required for all customers. The current proposal neglects to require compliance with Americans with Disabilities Act requirements that are separate and apart from paratransit requirements, and there are a number of those, so that's missing. The current proposal limits the service to 4 trips per day, and my real concern is that if these companies are only providing wheelchair accessible service to subsidized trips, if you use up your 4 trips, then you don't have access to a wheelchair accessible Uber or Lyft trip, because you can only use it if it's subsidized. And then the current proposal does not address ensuring adequate wages and benefits for drivers. And that's all drivers. I'm including drivers with disabilities. And I do think that's a wonderful thing that some of these companies do, but we have this chance to really raise the standards in the community here in the District of Maryland, Virginia. So really pushing for ensuring quality working conditions for all the drivers and requiring that prioritized hiring of any metro access workers who lose their jobs because these trips are being shifted, that they have a career path forward. So I have formal comments, and the coalition, there's a coalition, the Transportation Equity and Accessibility Movement, has submitted comments as well, and we can share those with anybody if you haven't seen them. And I just wanted to end, I'm going to quote a member of our movement, our coalition, and I didn't ask him if I could quote him, but I just love this little quote, and I'm going to just keep saying it. And this is sort of coming off of a Washington Post article about this proposal. And the first line in that article that came out over the weekend talks about how important it is for Metro Access to provide alternatives because we cost money, because people with disabilities cost too much money. And to me, that's not okay. So this quote, riders are people, not pennies to be pinched. Giving money to companies that explicitly and proudly lobby against accessibility to provide an accessibility service is a slap in the face. And workers, be they in vans, taxis, or their own cars, need to be well-trained and well-compensated if WMATA really cares about providing a quality service. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. And the question I have for you is the comments you, your proposal submitted as an RFI, part of the RFI?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
one of the committee to hear that. Thank you.
Next person, Francie White.
Let's see, my comment really has to do with the ability to drive for example.
Let's go to the microphone, please.
Let's see, my comment really has to do with the Abilities Ride program, and I know that it's going to be up for discussion later on, but I have been sitting around talking with several Metro Access riders, and I know this was brought up in the Metro Access subcommittee meeting in reference to the four rides, and a great deal of concern over that. But my question is, has there been any thought given to possibly rolling over some days or some rides for individuals? I don't know necessarily what the amount would be, like maybe 8 or 6 or something like that, which could somewhat address the concern where a person might not even use Abilities Ride for the full month, but they would have an opportunity if needed. They would have sort of like a bank of rides available for them. And the other concern in just sitting down and talking with people, a lot of concern over the quality assurance of the Abilities Ride program. Like, it really needs to be better addressed. That's it.
Thank you. It looks like we'll have a lively discussion when that comes up.
And the last person on my list, Barbara.
Hello, I'm the guardian for someone who uses Mentor Access who is deaf. I was wondering two things. I've been told through customer service that there is no possible way for someone who uses texting with their phone to communicate with Mentor Access. For example, they're out away from a building, so there's no TDD or anything like that. To me, that makes Mentor Access non-accessible to that community. The other is that if they should get a cab ride, which he does quite often, usually, there is no signage on the cab that says this is a Mentor Access ride. And one time he actually got in a different cab, and fortunately we had the money there. We met him there and paid for the cab ride, then got reimbursed. But other than ID, and the driver said, okay, you have an ID, there is, couldn't they have something like a metal stick-on sign like you do for Domino's or something, a little sign that goes on the outside of the cab, even when they just show up at the place, so the person isn't depending upon asking, frankly, what might be someone who's totally not associated with Metro Access for a ride. And just wondering about those two things. And certainly, I have to say, in all of our relationships with people on Metro Access, customer service, appointment rides, whatever, the people in your office are polite, efficient, and extremely helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mary Moran.
Paul Simulva again, Metro Access Chair. Thank you for your concerns. Again, there is staff here who will reach out to you and speak to you about each of your concerns and investigate them. So, Allison Adams, thank you.
Okay. Does that offer public comment?
Yes, it is, sir.
So a couple of responses. The hyperlink to the bus routes, I thought I reported on it, but what we're doing with that is our IT team is revamping the WMATA.com public page. And while it's not an absolute promised inclusion yet, it is part of their consideration for what they're doing. It wasn't originally, but after you brought up the idea, I directed her to the Boston, the staff member, I directed them to the Boston Metro webpage to get a sample of what you were describing. And IT has promised to try very hard to incorporate that. So that's one thing. 7,000 series announcements, well, that is supposed to be our guest tonight. If he doesn't show up, I think we'll change the agenda. I want him to come. He's here, so I'll show you there. He's here. All right. Announcements on rail about elevator outages. And I saw elevator outages information on PIDs. So there's two different questions, but yes, right now, scrolling or digitized information on the vehicles themselves about elevator outages. But we have the vehicle expert coming tonight, at least the 7,000 vehicle expert, so perhaps he will be able to address that request. It is, there is elevator outages on the PIDs. Now, you have to, normally when you see the PIDs on the platform, the information that's on there is the number of cars, the line, and the destination. And then after a little bit of period of time, there'll be a scroll of the elevator outages. Now, to address, and we want to keep a balance, and that information isn't going anywhere, but we are, we saw last month the new mini mezzanine displays we're doing. Well, we're also looking at putting new displays on the platforms that will be dedicated to elevator outages and other information so that the PIDs can remain strictly for the rail line and car information. Because there's been some discussion back and forth between various sets of customers, let's say that. And some customers think the elevator scrolling takes up a long time, and then they're not aware of what car is coming, how many cars on the train. So Metro's trying to address this by not lowering the accessibility information on our platforms, but by adding to that through the installation of new displays. So that's an initiative we're studying, and we have hope to be underway soon. So, and the other comments on the abilities ride proposal, we'll save that for the discussion. We can answer those questions now.
Mr. Chair, if you can, good evening, everyone. Mr. Blake, did you have any further comments on the train operator making announcements regarding the elevator?
Now, as you pointed out, your staff has been following up. I've seen a notice that has gone out. I think where we're at now is we have to identify individual culprits. I mean, just for lack of a better word. They've all been notified that elevator outage information is required. They've been notified by management to that extent. So, and I know you've done it, but if you and other customers can help us, if you're on a train, you know there's an elevator outage, or you don't, but if you know there's an elevator outage, you don't hear the announcement, you let our office know the date, time, destination, direction. We will then follow up with rail management to identify the particular operator and have that operator address. Sorry.
Thank you, sir. One point I don't know was addressed, dealing with, I think, a point that brought up about the accessibility of websites. Was that brought up or no?
Accessibility.
In other words, the ability to be able to access the information on websites. I know that, for instance, we have individuals from the Columbia Lighthouse, I think, that have gone through and started looking at certain portions of the websites and other material to make sure it's accessible.
That is underway. That's a little different than the Hyperlink project, but yes, we have a contract. The Metro has established a 508 compliance contract where we hire a third party to certify the accessibility of our website, but when we say website, we're talking about each individual page. So as we go through pages that are compliant, great. Those that are not, the consultant provides us with recommendations and costs to fix those pages.
Okay, great.
Mr. Chairman,
I wanted to highlight that. Thanks. Mr. Kent.
Yes, there were a couple of other public comments that I wanted to make sure we responded to. The customer who is speaking on behalf of the deaf customer wanted to know whether or not Metro Access taxi vehicles have a means of being identified when they come in place of one of our vans, and they are supposed to have a placard displayed that actually is part of our service. So when they don't do that, then it's not functioning as intended. So that's something that we have to correct. It's probably something we haven't brought up with the taxi providers in a little while. And the same thing is true of the elevator announcements with the train operators. Mr. Barnes has been kind enough to give us specific examples. And, you know, we've gone through the whole process of clarifying that it is required. And in an organization with so many employees, a lot of times people say, well, I heard differently. And so he said, well, here's the policy. It's in writing. It's confirmed. Your boss told you. And we're going to keep broadcasting that out. But sometimes messages like that have to be repeated until they seep into all corners of the organization. You have the ability to influence this partially by bringing it to our attention. When you tell us, we tell the management passes it on. But the AAC also has the opportunity to put this subject into your reports to the board to reiterate, you know, staff tells us that this is required and this is being worked on. We're so happy that you're working on it, Metro. We'd like to see you keep working on it and just kind of keep encouraging this subject to be in the fore. The other comment that the customer made regarding service for deaf customers, I do agree that text messaging is something that not only deaf customers, but a lot of customers have asked us about over the years, why isn't this a means of communication? And the good news I have is that it absolutely is in our plan to add that capability to our service. There is a mechanism that does allow some limited SMS text messaging to work with our system. But one of the reasons why you haven't seen it on Metro Access is because we wanted to roll that out at a time where the customer could use that text message to ask for an ETA. So we want to create a situation where the customer would send a text message in and get back an ETA on their phone that says this is when your ride is coming. Unfortunately, if we tried to roll that out today, it would tell you a wrong time. because it's estimated based on our scheduling system, not on current traffic conditions. So we would drive everyone crazy if we told them, gosh, your ride's coming in 5 minutes, get built. So we have been working behind the scenes to add traffic, you know, traffic-sensitive maps to our scheduling system so that whenever we can deliver an accurate ETA, that's when we would turn on features like that. And the Abilities Ride proposal is also a technology-driven concept. So we would envision that there would be an opportunity to use that kind of technology there as well. You know, we've heard the group loud and clear about telephone. We understand the committee's opinion on that. So, you know, that's obviously been taken into consideration with the rest of the input. But I thought those comments those points were really well taken. And I think the last point, you know, I'm going to ask Mr. Blake to kind of, if he can either speak to this or follow up, is the closure of the elevators at Fort Totten and Tacoma simultaneously. It sounds like a problem, so
they're interested. Right. And I think we need to address that one. Yeah. The Fort Totten elevator was scheduled outage, as well as the Tacoma Station. However, it was a result of a delay or problem they had. The contractor had an issue at Fort Totten. The plan was not to close the gate at the same time. Had a problem at one station, you have a contractor ready to work at the other station, you create this. They're trying to finish up Fort Totten as quickly as possible, and in the meantime, that creates this challenge. We as Exit definitely recognize this, and we let our colleagues know this, but that's what happened. It wasn't planned. If that was a plan, and we go through the schedule, that is not our plan.
So it's a translation, that was unintentional.
It was unintentional, but we've got to, you know, we use that a lot, you know, I'm not sure. But it shouldn't have been the contractor had an issue, had a different contractor ready to go to work on the other one, which would have created additional challenges, but it wasn't the plan.
So if I could just say to the committee, you know, Mr. Blake does monitor this and tries to avoid this from happening for scheduled outages. Sounds like this situation kind of happened, you know, beyond our control. But we want you to know that we do understand the significance of that. Also, Ms. Case's example of the 8-hour ride, that would be a record. If it did happen, I mean, I'm obviously compelled. We need specifics, and we will investigate it for sure. That, you know, that definitely raised an eyebrow. So, you know, I really would like to know the specifics so we can get into that. And finally, to Mr. Orlean's comment, you know, I'm not sure what the board's intention is or the McKinsey report. You know, the board hired the consultant for their own purposes. So I've not been given any latitude to take that information into my own hands. But your comments are a matter of record in today's meeting, and I'll make sure that the board secretary hears of your request. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I have two members waiting for their comments.
Okay.
Am I allowed to present?
Do we have? Are they?
They're pertinent to Mr. Blake's comment. Was my comment.
Okay, so we have three more people who want to public comment.
No. I have four members waiting to report their comments, to make their comments related to topics that we haven't spoken in a few minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, first Brian, please, after that, Philip, Mr. Tappan, and last one, Doris. Thank you.
Hello, first I need to say my name for the webcast because I'm a senior production. So my name is Leanne Barker from Washington, D.C. Secondly, thank you for bringing up about the tax, because that's something that I brought up over a year ago, and I have not heard a follow-up about that. So I really appreciate that. It's being more fun, and it's going a lot, so I really appreciate that. Mr. Blake, I have a question about the two. So the PID, the PIN, will remain information about the train on the platform. And then the second TV or the member team will be the one about the elevator aperture. Which one will continue to share information if there's a train going down or emergency notification?
Both. So right now they can put emergency information on the PIDs, but the intention, just like the mini mezzanine signs that we introduced, you'll be able to put all sorts of different messaging on those. But on the platforms in particular, they'll be for elevator outages and other information that some customers have said takes so long, you don't get to know what the train information is. So we're just trying to create a balance.
Do you have a timeline for that, Mr. Mike?
Well, it's moving already. Well, we're working on it. All I can tell you is the goal was, I know I've seen, let's say, plans and designs that could have been implemented as recent as last year. So once that timeline passed, I'm not really able to predict for you a time. But I can tell you that the team that you met a couple of weeks ago with the mini mezzanine signs, they're working very hard on this exact project as well.
Mr. Pinnick, please.
Yeah, along that same line, location, location, location. The people that need to know about the elevator outages are the people with disabilities that use the elevators. And right now, the PIDs are totally unseeable when you get out of an elevator because the escalators are in the way and the crowds are in the way. The mezzanine signs are nowhere near where the elevators are. So putting these up in a place where the people that use the elevators can't see them doesn't work. So I suggest that anything that's put in is put in a location where someone using an elevator is going to see it.
Very terrible.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Tappan, you don't have?
Okay. Mr. Green, instead of waiting to get in touch with someone in the staff that elevator is not working, why can't we just go to the station manager and before that directly, so the station manager could take action immediately? Than us to find it to the office and call somebody here, or why not take action right at the platform?
Well, are you saying the elevator is out when you're
yeah.
at the station?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that absolutely is the case. What we're talking about more so is when you're on the train and you need the elevator at 4 Totten, but the operator, the train operator, doesn't announce it, and you get off at 4 Totten, and then you're stuck there until the next train comes. What we're saying is, operators need to do their required duty of letting customers know at least 2 stations in advance that an elevator at a particular station is out. And we were just saying to have that particular operator address, you let us know so that we can directly talk with station management. I mean, excuse me, with rail management.
Okay, Doris now, please.
Doris Gray, and I'm from Fairfax County, Virginia, also representing the Access for All Committee of the Council of Governments. So I wanted to ask 3 things. One is, do you have a timeline on the implementation of providing text messaging for Where's My Ride and for arrival announcements, because this was brought up by a member of the Fairfax Area Long-Term Care Coordinating Counselor who came to the meeting to testify, a deaf man, and of course by others, but that was like a year ago, and he has been asking about it when I go to those meetings as a council member, so I'm just on the Mobility and Transportation Committee. So I'm just wondering what the timeline is. And the second thing is that I'm also wondering about exactly how long if it takes to get an elevator up and running when it goes down. There has been an elevator now that's out of operation at Courthouse Metro that has been out of operation for a week to a week and a half. I can absolutely say with confidence it was out a week ago. And I'm wondering what takes so long. They said the kiosk manager said something about a part. I was very sensitive to it because of my broken foot. Even now, with the cast off, I still really have to be careful about what I do. So, and the last thing was that I'm wondering about information about maintenance of the lighting and the timing on that. I know it's going to be brought up at the lighting work group, but that is a very important issue in some circumstances that even the maintenance of the home lighting system has not been working. And one of the issues brought up at that committee meeting, as you know, is also that the lights on the platform while at rest are often in many stations completely dark. They're not illuminated as they used to be and as was part of the equivalent facilitation for putting in the red tiles back in 97. So I think it really has to be addressed. It's a very dangerous situation not having those lights there and visible for people with low vision or other vision impairments who have bisexual vision and use that along the right things and whatnot.
Well, on the courthouse, because that is not in plan, that would be an outage. I'm going to have to follow up with the committee on what I find is the problem and the challenge.
It's a well-used station by people with disabilities coming to our Lincoln County.
Doris, I missed two.
No,
I understand we're running at least 20 minutes behind.
Yeah. And the lighting on the platform is a challenge. I know I could just speak to one of my colleagues, one of the staff members, David Schaefer, took on the issue this past week at one of our stations. So, you know, and following up on that, I've been in direct communication with our leadership in the plant area that manages all of these facilities. And we're now having a serious dialogue as to what is the issue and the challenge that we're hearing about these platform lights. Because as you mentioned, the equivalent facilitation is equivalent to federal law, so that there's no way around that. So we're following up on that around the system.
And I think there was a third.
I was going to address both the one about real time information for metro access. It is on our work plan. It is supposed to be in January, but obviously that will be rescheduled in terms of metro access staff having a discussion with an update on that piece.
Something we're following well, so that would be good. Okay. Great. Thank you, Doris. I appreciate that. Okay, next on our agenda, automated announcements, 7,000 rail car series, Mr. McGovern. With the transit infrastructure engineering section, there's been a lot of discussion on the automated announcements, particularly on the 7,000 rail car series. So, sir, if you'd like to give us a brief, and I think we'll have some suggestions for you.
Okay. And thank you for inviting me to speak on this topic. As you're aware, I've been here before through the design process, briefing the group on some of the challenges and some of the amenities that we've incorporated specifically to address this community. In terms of the audio announcements, the metro system is a very complex system, as you're aware, and arranging announcements that will address each particular station is tedious at best, and we've been able to arrange it such that it will accommodate each individual station so that we don't have a lot of miscommunication. One of the challenges really is how do you identify a station when the train gets there to know that this is Metro 7, for instance. Because sometimes we single track, sometimes we run in reverse direction once in a while. So there's a lot of accommodation that needs to go into making announcements. Also, when we make an announcement, there's something on the wayside that has to trigger that announcement. And once the trigger happens, like for instance, when we're approaching the station, about 1,000 feet before the station, it triggers an announcement to announce where the train is going, where the next station is, and as train approaches more into the platform area, it receives what we call a train to wayside communication that tells it that I am at the station. And at that point, it recognizes, the train recognizes that it's at the station. As soon as the train stops and the doors open, that's another trigger for an announcement. And we cannot delay the chime and the information that the doors is opening at that point, because if you delay it, the doors will be fully open by the time you make any other announcement. So the first announcement is say, the doors are opening. And once that is announced, then we follow up with, again, the destination of the train, the next station that the train is going to get into. And so this sequence cannot be really changed because of what I just described, because if you change the sequence, the information becomes irrelevant at that point. And so that's one of the challenges that predicts how we announce information at the station.
All right. My guess is we have questions.
Okay, let's go in this way.
Hang on. So, Phil, you wanted to discuss this?
Yeah.
I think we'll start with you. Roger, the ranking member of the Bus Rail Committee, I think Bus Rail had some certain suggestions.
Yeah.
Right? And I believe
Marissa.
Marissa, good. Okay, so why don't we start? Let me start with Phil, and we'll go to Roger, Marissa. Phil.
Yeah, I had two questions. One that directly relates to the sequence of the announcement. There was a 25-second rule, I believe, put in. I'm thinking basketball probably. Before the doors open, after the train comes to a complete stop at the station, that was a safety issue. And if, in fact, they're going to enforce that rule, that there is a delay before the doors open, there should be plenty of time for that announcement to go on before the doors open. The doors are not open instantaneously as soon as the train stops at the station. They're supposed to wait. So correct me if I'm wrong, but...
Yes, I think there's no intentional rule to limit when the doors open on the train.
Well, the board passed this several years ago.
Yeah. They come up with
it enforced recently, but it was passed by the board, but it's being ignored. That's not right.
Okay. I'm not aware of that because, in fact, some of our passengers complain that the doors take too long to open when it gets to the station. Because when the train arrives at the station, everybody's at the door getting ready to get out. And basically we synchronize the opening of the door with the safety checks that the train has to go through to make sure it's properly berthed at the station, that all the checks, that the train is fully on the platform before the door opens. And that does not take 25 seconds.
But the reason that was put in was for the safety of the disability community, so that they would have an opportunity after the train stopped. If they're blind, if they're with a mobility device, if they have a hearing issue, to figure out where the door was, which side of the train they were on, and how to get off. And that was particularly brought to the board, and the board did put that in.
Maybe what you're talking about is closing the door.
No, we're talking about opening the
door. Because there really should be no reason to delay opening the door.
It's not a question of whether there's a reason. It was put into place by the board.
Okay. So let's see that if we can investigate that, because we also brought this suggestion up about 2 months ago to the board to say that the train zipping into the station, people not being able to board properly and safely is a safety issue. So let's take that as an action. Either we can take it for an action from the AC committee, but that is an issue that I think we need to look into.
Okay, if you don't mind, if I just want to understand the issue. If somebody's on the train and the doors open, it doesn't matter when the doors open, though, because they can get out if you delay the closing.
Is someone on the platform as well as someone on the train?
On the train.
When the doors open, there is a mad rush. for people moving in and out. And if you have a disability of vision, hearing, or mobility device, you get trampled.
So we're stating, hang on, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so we're stating here that this is a board policy.
Okay.
So we will find that policy, and we will make sure that you see it.
And if there is a policy, you should be able to announce it.
Right.
Before the door is open.
Right. Hang on, wait a minute, hang on. Let me first go to Phil for one more second. Phil?
No, I was just saying, if that is a policy, then there's no reason not to announce the destination of the train before the door opens.
Right, okay. I didn't know if you had other points.
No.
Heidi, I will recognize you, but let me go around the circle here.
Philippa was one.
Did you have something else, Phil?
No.
Okay, good. Roger, from the bus rail subcommittee.
Good afternoon. Good evening. So basically, there's been a lot of discussion about the like the announcements, like I had one person bring it up to my attention tonight that why don't the people wait when the train is completely stopped, then as the door is open, they say this is the train to Glenmont instead of like saying it while the train is going through the tunnel and as it gets ready to stop. There's been a lot of people like feeling that they should say as soon as the train is completely stopped and the door is open, because that would make people without, especially with abilities, will find it like a kind of like trouble, because they will not be able to. I mean, they won't be able to know that destination once because the train conductor already made it like in the, as it's entering the train. I mean, as it's entering the destination, why can't they just make the announcement right at soon as the door is open?
Well, that's what we do now, actually. I'm talking about the 7K now. Let me just clarify. 7,000 series is what I'm describing here. As soon as the doors open, it says it has a chime, and then it says doors opening. Step back, allow customers to exit. When boarding, please move to the center of the car. It says that. And then it says this is a red line train to, you know, Glenmont, or a red line train to Shady Grove. The next stop is. That's what is programmed into the car currently. So it does announce the destination and the next stop right after the doors open and stepping, allow passengers to board.
Okay. Marissa, you're up next. I have a couple thoughts myself. Marissa?
My question is if Metro is seen for lack of a better word right now, that it's a technology issue that they can't put these in order, and it'd be fine for you to show the mother that be later that the boy should make an exit. Why aren't they just concerned about the orbital left? That it's a safety issue. It's kind of a no-brainer that it's a safety issue. Because if you have anybody with any type of disability or mobility device on the platform trying to get on or off the train with a mind rush, they're not going to get hurt. Which therefore causes a safety issue. And if Metro is saying that it's too difficult because of the new train series technology, then they need
So obviously we've agendized the 7,000 series cars tonight because of the fact that these announcements are automated. And my understanding is the committee had an interest in switching the order of the announcements to give more time for the customer to get the information that they need. Is it also true that the committee is generally satisfied with the way this is handled on all the other series?
No.
Or is this change for the 7,000 that you want us to do that and then make the rest of the fleet go the same way into the future? Is that
I think that the 7,000 will...
There is a gentleman in the audience, I think, who came to address this as well. I know there's no reason on the other cars automated, but
right.
I wanted to know
I think
the committee's view. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Yes. I just wanted to know the committee's view of the way that Metro handles this issue generally across the whole fleet, just so I can be clear on the committee's entire view of this issue.
Right. I think that I'll just speak from what I've heard from everybody. You guys can correct me, which you're very good at doing. I think that using 7,000 series as a model, the committee would like to see this applied to all the rail cars.
Gotcha.
I think that there are ways, a couple things. What Phil said about the wait time at the stations has some bearing on this whole situation. The second is looking at some of the way the announcements are spoken. This is a red line train. I don't need to know that this is a red line train. You could just say red line, Glenmont, to speed up the announcements. So there are some suggestions as far as shortening and changing the order of some of the announcements. I'll let people speak to that in a minute. I think that one of the reasons why this is agendized, whatever, is that people are very pleased that we're finally getting automated announcements on the train. We've been looking for this for 15 years, so I think that's an accomplishment. I love the 7,000 series. Tony, you're up next, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, a couple things, because I ride most days of the week the 7:15 a.m. train, Lincoln Greenbelt, the 7,000 series. I love riding on the train. I love having the clear audible announcements. One of the things that's a problem is technology is great, but humans are great at messing it up. And the current way the announcements are made, in talking about the order in which things are said, is by the time it can get to telling you what the next stop is, or this is a green line train to Branch Avenue, you already hear the bum, 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 and then it shuts it off, and you never know. I take the green to Mount Vernon to switch to a yellow, and it more times than not, the doors aren't open long enough to cycle through the whole message. So there needs to be either a way to reorder, because if you're someone who needs to like realize what stop you're at or what the next stop is and adjust yourself, it's better to know sooner than right as the doors are closed and you have to leap out at the last minute. And incidentally, when the train reaches Fort Totten on the green line specifically, although I know there's a Rush Plus 7000 as well, I rode home the other day, when it gets to Fort Totten during rush hour, it says catch the yellow line train at Fort Totten. The yellow line doesn't stop at Fort Totten it doesn't terminate there during rush hour. And my understanding is these are just during rush hours when the 7000 is running. So in a sense, that actual announcement is wrong for Fort Totten. But as far as the order in which things are said, I think definitely you can truncate it more, and then you can also put more of the vital information up front versus, I mean, you know, the some of the more standard things that it says stop after stop. So.
Thank you.
Steve, you're up next.
I put all of this into the general category of communications clutter. The problem with too many words during key points is that the important comments are not being stated. So I believe that the announcements that we should have are very simple and straightforward. You have the sound of a bell, followed by probably the automated communication that says only doors open. There was a time years ago when the information about standing back and moving in was helpful and actually moved people. It doesn't anymore. All right? The residents don't hear it. The tourists that we're trying to help aren't listening. They're doing other things. It's clutter. So I hope that this, it served its purpose. It has no purpose, and now it's communications clutter. Bell, doors opening, and then the conductor says the name of the station. And I would seriously recommend there be nothing else said. After the conductor or the automated announcement says the name of the station we're at, it's time for the operator or the conductor to make any particular specific announcements. Like, next train is in 2 minutes, so the people know. I don't think it's necessary to have an announcement as to whether it's a red line or a green line. At that particular point, most people know. And most people, there's a cost benefit. There's a cost in terms of clutter. So I would say short and sweet.
Well, the lines would be helpful. Where you have the lines of silver.
Exactly.
Green lines over the track.
Right.
Green line. Well, why do people need to hear green lines for a cotton if they're waiting for green lines for a cotton?
When a train comes in, I can't tell if it's blue, orange, or silver. Being visually impaired, I need to know what line it is.
Yes, yes.
So that would be one reason why you need to know what line you're on. However, I take your remarks, the clutter. You're right about that.
I think
that's what we're trying to get to in condensing.
I have five more seconds. Let's truly consider eliminating the announcements on the platform, such as some of our favorite first-time writer. Please watch your hands. We're glad to have you. And so that the station operator, so whenever something is said, the passengers know this is important. Again, a communications cutter.
Good, sir. Thank you. Carolyn.
My comment is, I believe there is too much verbal clutter, so it should be abbreviated, but I don't believe you should take the color of the train out, because that stuff is easily recognizable, whether we speak English or whatever, you know, color. That's just as important as the station, and sometimes more important. I think that there should still be two announcements. I don't know, he said one was 1,000 feet away, and that helps a person with a mobility impairment need to, you know, move toward the door or try to navigate so that they can get off either first or very last. It should also be announced at the station.
Thank you. Brianna, you are next. And then I'm going to go to Doris. And I'm going to recognize Heidi and Chris. I think you will.
Larry.
Okay. Chris, did you want to speak?
No, Larry was going to say everything I was
saying. All right, good. Let's go, Brianna.
I wanted to take the blame for the discussion that started on the 7,000 cars. It's actually several months ago. I called today to that Pachena. I started it by requesting I buy the 827 red train from
going to Shady Grove, whatever. So I rewrote the downtown department several times. My original request was to add one handrail because when it's during the rush hour, it gets really crowded and there's not enough places to hold on to the train. So that was my original request. And then I read from there onto the announcement and so on. So I still want to point out there's not enough handrail on the 7,000 car, right? I hope that's something that's still in the works of adding those handrails, but that's really important, especially above here because the people during rush hour can have something to hold above the head and not fall on other people. The other thing I wanted to add was about the wait time for the door open. The other purpose for that is it's not only for people with disabilities, but for people who have someone, especially small someone, a stroller or someone, and they need time to leave the train or get on the train. And there have been numerous cases of parents being separated from their children, especially during rush hour, and they've actually disabled trains. There was a case 2 months ago that happened to me about Toronto for the same reason, where a parent's father was separated from two children on the platform and he was on the train. So the driver on the train actually shut it down because they were trying to get the father to reunite with a small children. So you have to think about things about that when you're doing the wait time for the door. And the third thing is that because I'm deaf, the announcement really does apply to me. I rely fiercely on the new monitors, which I love. But because of their placement, sometimes they're blocked by people, especially during rush hour. So I still have to rely on the windows and the doors to see where I am and which station I'm at. But I am in full support of what the committee has to say about the announcement. Thank you.
Thank you. We go to Doris, then I'm going to recognize Heidi and Larry, and then we'll end this discussion for our next discussion.
Okay, first I want to say that I associate my comments with those of Dr. Posner. In fact, the Bus and Rail Committee came up with a recommended protocol, which came through the AAC and went to the board. Part of that protocol seems to be forgotten. So they were logical protocols that both people with mobility impairments and people who are blind and vision impaired, as well as hearing impaired and using hearing aids like myself, need. The train is, when it pulls up to the platform, is supposed to delay the opening and announce the line color and destination. That is absolutely essential for people who are blind and vision impaired not to get in the wrong train. Secondly, then the door opens, has the usual chime and door message, but then the train needs to repeat what the next station is, because that allows somebody to correct if they haven't heard it. Believing me, the need for that train before the doors open helps to give the time for somebody with a vision impairment or mobility impairment to station themselves at the door to the train to be able to get on. And somebody with a hearing impairment, it gives you time to hear it. Then on the train, as I recall, the protocol was that while still in the tunnel, the train will announce for the people who are in the train what the next station is. That helps you because if there's any glitch along the way, you know where you're coming to. And it's very important. And then when it arrives at the station, it does what I just talked about, but then before pulling off, it should say what the next station is. In the case of transfer stations, as I recall, because of issues that we had, that the train operator is supposed to announce two stations away, and then again repeat it at the station next to the transfer station,
that the transfer station is coming up so that you can ready yourself to get off at the transfer station. These protocols, it seems to me, should be written up in the script, and I'm not sure that we ever saw them, but they're there for very important, they are not communications overload, they are there for effective communication. And it seems to me that if those are the protocols that were vetted with this committee and are now board policy, that on the 7,000 series, they should simply be programmed in that manner. And so the last thing I do want to say is that I know I've had a problem. I've only experienced one 7,000 series car, and it was when I was at. I was at National Airport Station, and it did not speak on the outside, which is one of the problems, whether it's manual or the 7,000. That at the point where it arrives on the platform, it needs to be both interior and exterior speakers working at the same time.
Doris, yes, thank you. All right, let me go quickly to Heidi and to Larry, and we'll wrap up there.
My check, this is Larry. Okay. One quick question. When the doors open, that step back to allow customers to exit when boarding, please move to the center of the car. Is that a canned announcement? Is that one canned announcement, or is that two different announcements?
It's one canned announcement.
Okay, that's good to know. So, first of all, with regard to the train announcing the color code in the destination, it's federal law, so Metro kind of has to do it. If you look up CF 49 CFR 37 167, and go through all those letters, it actually stipulates that route ID announcements have to be done at stations where more than one train or conveyance starts the same stop. The second thing is, now that I kind of have a little more of an understanding of, the announcement scheme when the train docks and the doors open, it's definitely imperative that the route ID and the route designation, the color code in this case, and the destination be announced. And as many people said, it's actually not happening presently, mostly because the operators are trying to close the doors before the train happens. If we were to sit on the platform and do a comprehensive study of what happens on the platform when the train arrives, if no one hears that announcement, that route ID announcement, it's the same as the announcement not happening. And that could have severe implications for the FTA. So it's one of those things that probably seriously needs to be addressed and properly rectified.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
If I may say something, basically the train, the 7,000 series or any other train, is not self-aware of where it is in the system. So one of the keys to make announcements is to have situations that the train interacts with the wayside, which is the station. And one of that is when it gets the door open command. That triggers the train to say, okay, the door is opening, make this series of announcements. While we can shorten the announcement or rearrange some of it, but we cannot put it in front of the door's opening announcement. That's the key to the announcement. The second thing is that we have, as I presented during the design phase, there's a lot of competing ideas as to what constitutes the perfect timing for doors opening. Some people, before the train stops, they want to jump out because they have something else to patch, maybe another line or something. And some people want to come in. In terms of delaying when the doors close, I will take that and pass it on to management, because that is more of a management decision. Because we have a time that we say, okay, the train, when it leaves Greenville, has to get to Branch Avenue. And if you add 25 seconds every stop, that lengthens that time, for instance. But that is not a big deal if it's an organizational decision.
Right.
That, you know, set up an hour, and now it's going to take an hour 10 minutes or an hour 15 minutes.
You know. Good. Thanks, sir. Heidi, you have the last word.
I just wanted to answer a question you asked, which is why delay opening the doors? And I remember exactly when this changed, and it was 5 seconds, and it was so that the train operator can get up from his seat, walk across the cab, open the window, put his head out, and scan the platform. And that was the reason. Are there gunmen ready to shoot? Is there a young child running close to the door? Is there any reason that it would be unsafe? Has someone fallen? You don't want to open the doors and people trample them. And it was a board decision. And I know that because when I first taught myself to use fixed braille, I always entered only right next to the door where the train operator was, so I could get him to please make sure I get on safely, kind of a thing, and it made me feel better. So there is a reason, and it was supposed to be only 5 seconds, and I think it's a smart reason to ensure that there are no problems on the platform that opening the doors would affect.
Great. Thank you, Heidi. Let's go find that reason. Yes, we'll do. So we've had a lot of suggestions. Let me go back to the Bus and Rail Committee for a second. We've had a lot of different suggestions. Do we have a protocol come out of Bus Rail?
Yes, we do.
And the protocol was?
Justified as far.
Right.
Basically, what Doris said. What Doris said, basically.
Okay. So, that's been passed by resolution by the AAC. And submitted to the board as our best product. Wondering, we probably should pass that along also to the RAC, so you would have a joint agreement as to the wording on these trains, plus the time limit. So I think that would be useful for us to do from the AAC to the RAC. Because Rand also has questions and thoughts about this too.
Mr. Chair, I think adding to that, it has to be pointed out how important that is to transfer stations when there are multiple trains coming in. I have no disability. I can hear, I can see, I'm really good. I change trains at Metro Center, I come down the escalator, and I don't know if I'm getting on an orange, a silver, or a blue. And the signs that are supposed to be on the sides of the trains are not on the sides of the trains at the escalator bottom. So I am forced to get on a train blindly and hope that someone makes an announcement sometimes before we get to Ross Lane. So I can get off and wind up at Arlington Cemetery. And so I think it's important that people know this. It's not something that's frivolous. It affects not only the disability community, it affects everybody. It's what we call the universal.
And that's why I want to share it also with the RAC, get their buy-in on it, particularly with the timing of the stations. Okay, good. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate that. Good discussion. Let's see. Okay, I have Merrill Abilities Ryan, and I want to leave a little bit of time. We're not going to have time for Bus Rail or Metro Lines.
You can skip my report.
Right. I also have a couple of announcements I want to make at the end. So. Let's go to Maryland Abilities Ride. Mr. Wright?
Yes, we have a couple of questions. Metro doesn't plan to talk a whole lot, but we'll answer questions. But I can tell you some things we're thinking about. So the rollover idea, haven't thought about it. I think it's pretty creative. So we'll look at it. Now, let me just be very clear. When we roll this out, if it rolls out, because that's still a big question mark, but when we roll this out, it will be rolled out as a pilot project. pilot first just in one part of the service area, not all the service area, pilot where there is no minimum fare being required. That could change one day. What we're really trying to do is roll out a service with a scope of required services by the provider, partner, contractor that we believe meets the needs of our customers. So while the rollover may not be an issue, I think we can look at that and see how complicated that might be with that add cost, which therefore impact the length of the ride you can get. There are going to be a lot of aspects that can change, not necessarily will change, but can change once we evaluate the service and seeing how it works. But everything will be open in terms of some of the ideas. We've heard from Carol. She made some excellent points. We've heard on the phone line, and again, no firm final decision has been made on that, but we do hear you loud and clear. Some ideas we're looking at. One time there was an idea that Metro would pay at $12. I want to make it clear, when we say a surcharge for wheelchair accessible vehicles, because I saw some email communication, the surcharge is not being paid by the customer. That would be something that Metro would pay to the provider. But one of the things we're hearing that just paying for those trips in which I always use Heidi as my example, in which Heidi would directly request a wheelchair accessible vehicle may not do enough to incentivize enough wheelchair accessible vehicles to remain on the service. So one thing we're considering, just to give you one specific change you may see based on some things we've heard, instead of a $12 surcharge for wheelchair specific requested trips, we're looking at a $5 surcharge for all trips provided by a wheelchair accessible vehicle. So again, we're trying to incentivize, so whoever that wheelchair accessible vehicle picks up, they'll get a surcharge as an incentive for them to remain out there. We'll get to the questions. But again, we're looking at a lot of things. March 18th will be the end of the request for information period. We're going to take all the information we gather, come up with the best plan we can to initiate the service. It will take several months before we can get the request for proposal out there, and then a few months after that before any real service will be on the streets of the Maryland suburbs. But we're here to answer some more questions tonight or listen to your dialogue amongst yourselves.
Okay, so we'll jump into the questions in a second. I had one question. Now, we've gone through, I think this is our third meeting, and you've got some documents, third, fourth.
And don't we want to hide
it? Hang on. So before I open it up, the questions that have been asked around the table, have they gotten into the ARPA?
Well, yes. When you're having dialogue, like I've gone back and forth, I've answered a few questions, but those are official RFI comments.
Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. Good. I just wanted to make sure to everybody here who's given comments and back and forth over the 3-4 minutes you had, that those comments are as valid as something, for instance, like the papers that are being submitted to the website. Okay.
Yes.
Good. So, I don't think I have any more comments, do I?
Yes.
Okay.
We have comments.
No kidding.
Members waiting.
No kidding. Okay. Let me go with the Denise first. I know I have comments.
Yesterday morning, I'm laying in bed, and Channel 4 News comes on. I passed out the paper. Bill, could you read it? I asked them to send me their report, because I had to sit up in the bed.
And before Phil reads it, I will say there was some misinformation in the story.
Okay, but the point is that every meeting I ask, what is your deadline? No rush, we're going to have robust conversations. We don't have a date. Now, today, you're finally saying March the 18th.
No, ma'am. Okay. No, let me clear. Our very first conversation, I was saying, we wanted service on the street on July 1st. Y'all remember that conversation?
That was the truthful thing you said.
Right, that was the truth. But listen to me. March 18th is the deadline for the request for information. But in terms of when we actually can have this service or something like it running, there is no deadline yet.
But am I the only committee member that remembers he didn't, he said it was no rush? Am I the only one that remembers this?
I remember.
Hang on. I know that sometimes people report different things wrong. The problem is when you say that what we, the questions that we ask are written concerns. When we go back and forth, we said we want door to door. Can we have door to door? It's not going to be any door to door. Am I correct?
At this point, no. The service would not be door
to door. Okay. Now, read that, please.
Happy to. It's from Monique Haynes of NBC Universal, and the quote is, "It's a possibility that Metro may partner with Uber to help people with disabilities. The move would have Uber drivers basically replace the job of Metro Access. Metro would pay $15 a trip and a $12 surcharge for wheelchair-accessible vehicles. Customers would be restricted to 4 trips a day. Metro officials say the goal is to have the program in place by summer in Maryland." I think
so
she meant to say have in place in Maryland by the summer.
So that's what I woke up to yesterday. The thing is, now you're saying, I just heard you tonight, then I hear you say a certain area is going to be a pilot. Every time we discuss it, first it was rumors, and then it was every time, just tell us it's a done deal, what you're going to do, and just tell us.
Just to be clear, when I was saying pilot in a certain area, we're saying Maryland. That's what constitutes this being a pilot.
That we're not. Is that Rockville? Is that
no, it's over the entire Maryland. As areas that are within the Metro Access service area.
Okay, but didn't we spend money door to door? That's not going to happen. And you've been honest with me today, all of a sudden, said it might even go down to 2 trips instead of 4 trips a day. That's alarming.
So, Mr. Blake?
Yes, sir.
You have the RFI, which closes on March 18th.
Correct. That's the confirmed deadline.
That's the yes. Once you get the comments on the RFI, then you will answer those comments.
Let me clear. What we're going to do is not answer them individually. What we're going to do is evaluate each RFI comment and then build the final plan based on what we have, our information, as well as the feedback we received in the RFI.
Let me see if I understand this right. People are going to come in and ask questions, request for information. You're going to then evaluate those questions that come in, but you're not going to respond back to the people who wrote the questions. It's not a public document.
Well, the effort, the comments.
You're doing fine, Mr. Blake. I just want to add something. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me try to make this as uncomplicated as possible. The reason why we're doing an RFI is because this process allows this discussion to take place. I realize that sometimes it's confusing when multiple people are talking. I realize that. I understand, you know, Ms. Rush tells us all the time that, you know, she'll believe it, you know, when...
when I see it.
Right, that's right. Which means she'll never believe it, right? So, you know, we understand that. But the truth of the matter is, you know, I can only tell you that the staff, myself and my team, know that if we do not give this committee and the disability community the opportunity to discuss something with us before we roll it out, We're going to be discussing it afterward in front of the board, and we're going to have a lot of unhappy customers. Metro staff knows better, okay? Now, the thing is, when Ms. Rush says, okay, well, 1 minute you said you were doing this, and 1 minute you said you were doing that, well, you know, actually, to be totally clear, there is nothing written right now that is in a document that's going to become a contract. Everything that you have read, either in newspaper articles or in the RFI document, is for discussion purposes only. Okay? So we've floated a lot of different ideas. We've talked about sharing rides, not sharing rides, trip limits of 2 and 4 or not at all. We've talked about door-to-door, and we've talked about curb-to-curb. We've talked about background checks. We've talked about insurance. We've talked about all the different ways that this service could be put out, whether it really is a company like Uber or somebody else, whether small companies can participate. We've talked about all of those things. We've talked about the need for people who don't have computers to be able to access the service by phone. I mean, we're listening to you. And the thing the committee should keep in mind is that this entire process of putting out the RFI was simply for us to ask as many people as we possibly could to weigh in and give their opinions. Now, as far as responding back to each of the people to say, okay, this is what we think, that's not usually how those things are done. What happens is, you know, when an RFI is done, the information comes in. Metro will learn one very important thing from this RFI is who is interested in providing this kind of service and who's capable. This is called market research. That's what we are doing. That's all we are doing. We have made no decisions whatsoever about how this service is ultimately going to be. We're trying to put ideas out in front of you. We put an example in the RFI of what the service could look like, and we ask people to respond to it. But we also, in the RFI, gave people the opportunity to say things like, well, we don't think that the way that you've laid this out, Metro, is correct. So we are taking all of that information in. Now, I will say that as far as accurate information is concerned, you know, and there was an article in the Post recently that a few people have seen that I actually thought was a pretty good treatment of the subject, because it talked about the idea of using these types of companies all across the country, different markets. It was comparative. And the only part of it that, you know, I just wanted to state for the record that was a little different than my version is that we've not had this long history of talking to Uber or any of these other companies trying to put a deal together. But there have been discussions about, okay, we're interested, and Metro says, well, you know, we're just kind of trying different stuff. And by the way, before we do anything, we have to work with our committee, and we have to work with the public. So the bottom line is that on the 18th, the RFI feedback is due. That's how long everybody has to respond to the document. And everything that this committee has told us since we started talking about this subject has also been incorporated into the feedback. What our plan is that after that, the next step in the process is to synthesize all of that information and start making some decisions about actually what we go into the real solicitation, which is that's the real thing that companies would bid on to compete for contracts. So what you all care about, I assume, is you want to make sure that when Metro finally goes out on the street with a bid, that the scope of work that we offer has the types of things in it that you all have told us that you think need to be in. And what I'm saying is we aren't at that stage yet. And I hope that's helpful to the committee's understanding. Thank you, sir.
And I apologize. You know better than to answer about our advice and answer questions, because I know better than that. So the question, the RFI closes on the 18th. You don't have any projected date for an RFP then?
We want to be able to launch that in early summer. And I'm back to using the celestial calendar because there are people in this room who hold me to dates and promises that I made. So I'm going to use a sundial and I'm going to be very vague.
Mr. Kent, the thing is that everything that we hear, we bring it to you. And no, well, no, you know, you explain it very well. But it's already a done deal. And they're not rumors. It's happening before my blind eyes.
You know, Ms. Rush, I can't respond to that because I don't know who says it's a done deal. If you say it's a done deal, I say it's not. So, you know, I'm just, you can only, and the fact is, the nice thing about working with Metro is that when you award a contract, it's public information. No contract has been awarded, and I can assure you that if we were trying to have a negotiation at the same time that we're trying to do public competition, somebody'd get in a lot of trouble for that.
Right. No kidding.
That's not kind of how it works, okay? The idea is if you're going to put a public contract out for bid, you have to make absolutely sure that it's clear to all parties that it's open for anybody to bid, and that we're not giving anybody any more, one company, any more of an advantage over anyone else.
So, hang on. Yes, let me just suggest one thing that we'll get more questions.
Okay.
In the past, particularly when we did the Metro Access contract, there was a point where the vendors came in and could ask questions. I don't know if it was a vendor day or something like that.
That's
so,
true.
So I don't know if you're considering anything like that, but if you do, I would imagine that members of the AAC wouldn't mind being in attendance.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair. That is a pre-bid conference.
Right.
You know, sometimes, you know, what we did with Metro Access, we actually took it one step further. Instead of doing an RFI like we did here, we did a pre-solicitation conference. And we invited the companies to come talk to us before we even put the bid out. In this situation, our timetable is a little shorter.
Okay.
And based on Dr. Posner's suggestion and others, we chose the RFI this time.
I understand. Okay. Tam?
Yes.
Hang on.
Thank you.
Tam, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. King, I think you're very clear. You mentioned clearly, transparently, that you were just sounding it loud, taking the actions, listening to all the conversations and the suggestions. It's all transparent. No decisions is made. It could be big company, small company, no company. Maybe a Metro Access will stay, maybe. Possible that we will have Metro Access. Maybe it will never go to the privatization. Am I correct? Or Metro Access definitely out.
Metro Access can stay the way it is, but it will never go away. Because it is a permanent.
Well, this is what I'd like to know. So Metro Access might survive and stay, maybe modify, maybe have some subcontract, some. What are we going here? I don't see a clear picture.
Well, that's the only thing we haven't said.
I want to know what is the future of Metro Access.
What is the relationship between Metro Access Land Service that we operate now and all this discussion we're having about abilities ride? Okay. Metro Access, the way it runs now, is going to continue throughout time. Okay? Because it is a requirement of the ADA. It has to be there. ADA paratransit must continue. It is a civil right. It has to be there always for customers to be able to use. But it is expensive. The idea behind this, and I've heard people on this committee say before, well, we're just waiting to see when Metro Access starts getting run cheap. Now, I've lived that life. I don't want to go there. Okay? So I am advocating to leave Metro Access the way it is, but offer this other service. And if customers want to go over and use the other service, just like they do in D.C. with Transport D.C., they're welcome to do so. But I can assure this committee and all who are listening that there are so many people who need this kind of service. We're never going to run out of a need for Metro Access. and we're not going to run out of business for the companies. A whole bunch of people might say they want to go over and ride on Abilities Ride. There's still going to be plenty of customers that are going to be on Metro Access. Now, it may be a good deal fewer than there are today. The goal is, what we don't want is 10 years from now that Metro Access has another 1 million customers per year on it. Okay, so the idea is if we're doing 2 million now, and we are facing possibly 3 million in 10 years, what we're trying to do is say that in 10 years it's still only going to be 2 million. And the other maybe 1 million customers might be riding on Abilities Ride or some other service, and that will save everybody money. But Metro Access is not going anywhere.
Let's see, I think I have, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think it's. Denise, you, who I believe, have the last word?
Don't ask a question.
Charlie. Okay, so let me. Yes, you have, sir.
I think we'll have Denise
and Charlie, and then we'll wrap up with Doris. And then I need to move on. This will be the last part of this discussion.
Yes. I would like to ask Mr. Blake and Mr. Kent. I understand the request for information and all of the information you got from us, but I would just like to know what are the 3 to 5 non-negotiables that you are not willing to give up during the request for information.
This question, that's a great question. I hopefully have a great answer. Number one is we're not going to violate the law. That's non-negotiable, okay? So, you know, when people talk to me about ADA, and they talk to me about, you know, about safety regulations, those regulations cannot be broken. There absolutely has to be some level of insurance coverage. It can't be zero, it can't be G-Metro, you have insurance, can't we use yours? That's a non-negotiable. Can't be without a satisfactory driver training program so that we understand and can tell you with a straight face that the company that we award to understands who you're serving. I think that's very, very critical, and we talked about that. As well as some system to verify driver qualifications. Those things, you know, I mean, we have those elements in our current contract for a reason. Now, the thing is, at this moment in time, with a lot of those other decisions not made yet, this is why we're asking you some questions, because when you talk to consumers, you know, there's some people in the room tonight who said, you know, service has to be door-to-door. There are a lot of people with disabilities. Sometimes, originally, when we put door-to-door service in place, there were some customers who said, you mean to tell me that driver's going to walk with me to the building? I don't want them to do that. Okay, people with disabilities are all different varieties. You can't treat the disability community like everybody is the same. So if a disabled person says, well, you know, I might want the no-frills service. I might not need door-to-door service. Well, you know, and then we go in and we insist that everybody has to have door-to-door. Well, again, you know, what we're trying to do with this service is to give choice. So it may be that on Metro Access, it has to be door-to-door, and then on this service, maybe it's the customer's option. I mean, I'm saying maybe, because we're not making any decisions about it tonight. But the things that have to do with treating the customer right, complying with the law, and understanding who we serve, and being safe, those things are non-negotiable. As well as the fact that Metro is going to continue in this arrangement to be a watchful eye over what happens out there. That there also needs to be some mechanism for resolving complaints about the service. That it can't just be that the customer complains and, you know, that the service says, well, you know, you got the cheap service, so quit your complaining. You know, we can't have that either. We need to have some mechanism at the back end that said this service was not only less expensive than Metro Access, but it actually met the customer's need. Because the money that will pay for this service still comes from the jurisdictions, still comes from the monies that the board members control. And the board members want to make sure that the public is properly served. So all of those things have to be in there. The rest of it, you know, there are a lot of different options, but to me, those are the non-negotiables.
Okay, I've got 6 minutes and I've got two people. Charlie?
Thank you. I guess my question has to do with, and I have to qualify this by saying, you know, this is not my first rodeo. So I know the difficulties that are confronted by people trying to write policy and stay within the confines of the law and that, that, that. But the realistic concerns I believe I have, and I believe a number of people on the committee do, is the extent to which there will be attempts to either shade what this means or what that means, or get around this or get around that. You're dealing with companies like Uber who have lots of money, as you know, and who have...
Charlie.
I'm sorry.
You need to get to the question part.
My bottom line is, irrespective of what company is utilized, will they be required by contract to do what they need to do for all customers otherwise qualified to use it?
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Crawford, I say absolutely yes, because again, there's a report card that goes with this assignment that I and my team have to answer to. You know, one of the things that Metro does when it has a contract is there is a review process to make sure that the authority gets the services that were promised in the proposal and that Metro has agreed to in the contract. That is, you know, for those of you who have met that gentleman, Omari June, and his team, his entire team exists at Metro for that purpose, to supervise the contracts and make sure that the services that they are obligated to provide are in fact provided. So yes, that is absolutely a critical component of this. Because otherwise, if that doesn't happen, then all of this discussion is about an idea that really did not do what it was designed to do. I think that to us, we would consider that a failure, and we're not in the business to fail.
Thank you, sir. Doris, you need to jump to the question real fast. You have 1 minute.
Mr. Campani, I appreciate what you just said, and respecting that, I was wondering, in the process, I think it's important, and I hope you will agree, that the basic questions that this AEC has had with respect to how this service is going to comply with ADA, and since it's getting public money, comply with Title II of the ADA at minimum, and the ADA paratransit requirements as it would be an alternative, and I did put this in writing, and I think that is critical for this committee to express its support or non-support or mediocrity or whatever it is, and that's my question. I just wanted to comment, Mr. Chair, that I did see news articles at here on WAMU radio as well as WPTOP radio repeatedly yesterday saying that our general manager wants to see this happen to save money on better access, and that appears to be the purpose that it concerns me that's out there. Okay. So I'd like to know the time frame for getting us the answer to our question back.
Yeah. Mr. Kim, comments?
Yes, I do agree with Ms. Ray that yes, that ADA Title II is relevant to this activity. I think that just like with Transport DC, you know, one of the things I know that sometimes frustrates the committee is that, you know, all of you have been watching us deliver service on Metro Access for a long time. So you know what the finished product is supposed to look like. When we come to you and we offer to try something as a pilot, you know, pilots are not perfect. Pilots are not permanent either. And sometimes in order to put something into effect, sometimes implementation has to be incremental. You know, even the ADA itself, when it was first adopted, it took a long time for it to be fully implemented because it was such a major change. But I think, you know, today, 25 years later, those incremental days are over, and ADA fully applies, and it needs to be respected, and Metro intends to do that. But when Mr. Blake said that we were going to start with Maryland, that's an example. Obviously, Metro serves the whole region. We want to implement this alternative, but we need to do it in a way that's manageable. But I do agree with Ms. Ray that as far as ADA Title II is concerned, that is something that we need to make sure that the relevant regulations are put into the document. And that, you know, if there are any incremental aspects to it that are proposed, then we will discuss those with this committee before the document goes out for bid.
Okay. Fair enough. Good. Thank you very much. A request was made to sum up what we did as the executive committee board meeting, quarterly meeting with the RAC. I would say that for the most part, a lot of our discussion dealt with a lot of the testimony that we gave as far as the budget is concerned. Issues like twice the bus fare as a means for calculation for Metro Access. The communication piece that we had concerning whiteboards for hearing impaired deaf customers. Loading of smart trip cards on the buses. Those are three of the items that we brought up. And we shared our time with the RAC. The budget stuff was pretty similar between bus and AAC. So there was not a lot of difference. There wasn't any difference there. I would say the areas we stressed were safety, accessibility, sustainability. We also talked about emergency gates, and I was pretty emphatic, as I was at the board meeting, that we wanted those emergency gates unlocked, and we felt that was a safety issue. So those were about three or four things that we talked about. I know we're running out of time right now. I believe we have an emergency exercise coming up, and wanted to know about the status of the waiver, and if a waiver is still going to be required for this emergency exercise.
Mr. Chair?
B?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, sorry about that. The emergency exercise is still going on. It's on Sunday, March 13th, and it's at the Eisenhower Avenue Metro Rail Station. The waiver is in place. I'll share the accessible document with all the members today. Each member needs to have one signed and provided to the contact person. The time is pretty early, 6:45 a.m. We're asking members to arrive. The reason why the time moved up a bit was because I was told that we were having an enormous amount of time of laboratory breaks. And so that caused us not to process this evacuation in a timely fashion. So they moved up the time to 6:45 a.m. that they would like everyone to arrive. And usually around 7:30 or so, you move toward the train, and then at 8 a.m. the exercise starts, and it is scheduled to end around 1 or 2.
The couple of questions from our side, from the disability side. Has this been opened up to the disability community in general?
It has been opened up to the disability community, and actually that is being started by Emergency Management's office. They're handling all of that. So the email that I'll forward you today, and I believe the one that I forwarded you in the past, had information at the bottom of the email. If an individual is interested in participating, then that information will be at the bottom of that email. And they can contact Office of Emergency Management and find out all of what the responsibilities are.
Okay.
I'd like to know how many committee members, AAC committee members, would like to participate but would not sign the waiver?
Well, initially, we had quite a few members interested in participating. There was a question about the waiver. Once that was clarified and everyone knew that the waiver was required, mm-hmm. the number had reduced. Okay, so currently, we only have two members that still have agreed to participate.
And how many did you have in the beginning?
We had about six or seven members in the beginning that were interested. And then, again, once the question of the waiver came about, we're down to two members.
Well, I would still want to do it, but I'm not signing the waiver if you need somebody.
Well, the waiver is not a negotiable. It is part of the process. So if you want to participate, you have to sign the waiver. That's what it is. We have shared with OEM that there's going to be a smaller number of members participating, and members have shared their concern in previous meetings. Marissa, you had a comment?
Let me go to Marissa and then to Phil.
2 seconds, I want to. I understand the reason that we have to do these events early, but we need to fix me. We need to get the word up to the higher ups. We need to quit making it earlier than 7 because that's gonna make it even so we get less disability people to participate. For example, I don't participate in a heartbeat with all the risk and whatever, but I can't physically get any of my attendance to agree, to be allowed to get me up so I can get out.
Well, that's definitely an issue that we've discussed before and just trying to educate our colleagues on that. So we've done that and we'll continue to do it as they request these earlier times. As I said, when I got the information about the earlier time, I was concerned, and what I was told is that we spend an enormous amount of time at the bathroom prior to going on, and this is a timed event, so we don't have a lot of time because the system is shut down in that area during this event.
Right, I understand that you guys per se, but we need to get it up to the higher ups, and we as a community can continue to help you. I will personally go and talk to whoever I need them to because this is getting ridiculous.
Thank you. Definitely will take that test. Yes,
Phil, you got 1 minute, followed by Doris with a minute.
Let Doris go. I have a question and a comment about the executive committee meeting, which you skipped over.
Okay. Doris, 1 minute.
I just wanted to ask if you had been in contact with the Alexandria Commission on Persons with Disabilities since the station is right there in their territory, and also the two other DFBs in Northern Virginia Disability Services Boards or Commission. I haven't seen anything from Ireland. So I'm thinking if you're involved in the community, that's very important, and I know that Alexandria meets this Wednesday night.
Thank you, Doris. It's Office of Emergency Management is handling the outreach of participants. It's not our office. If you would like to send me contact information for those, I'd be more than happy to forward the information to them.
All right, thank you, Doris. Phil, what did I forget?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Phil.
Ms. Ray, are we talking about Chet Avery?
Chet is not a member of the commission any longer. I'm talking about Brian Miller and the commission is chaired by Molly Danforth.
Okay. All right. We can make the referral.
Okay. Thank you. Phil, what did I forget?
Yeah. Not forget. It's a question. This was a joint meeting of AAC and RAC with executive committee. And I wonder, is this the future, or are we going to go back to having our separate meetings? Because meetings I used to attend, There was a lot to be covered, and taking time away from Iraq for what they have to cover, and taking time away from us for what we have to cover, I think it's a bad idea to combine the meetings. The other question I have is, you told us what you presented to them. I'd like to know what their response was to what we presented, and also to bring out that the follow-up is, this is the executive committee. It's the chair, the first vice chair, the second vice chair, and the previous chair that attend. There are 15 other members of the board, and I think it behooves the members of this committee to contact their representatives on the board and let them know what was discussed at the executive committee and what our asks are. So, you know, one, the question, is it going to continue as a joint meeting? And then the other one is to implore everybody here to talk to your representative on the board about what was discussed at the executive committee.
Okay, so the answer, I understand the ask, and the answer to the first question is, I have talked to B, and I think we're moving it up to management, that I would not like to see us have four joint meetings a year. I think, and I've talked to the RAC also, and I think that we should have, I don't mind having a couple of meetings a year, but I don't want to see AAC business and AAC projects that we're working on, you know, shared with the RAC, RAC's time. And I think the RAC also feels the same way. They have a lot of things going on. Their focus is different from our focus. So, you know, I don't mind sharing one or two meetings. I don't want to see all four shared with the RAC. I think we've got a lot in common, but we work different agendas.
Thank you. I'd also like to mention that this week is MS Awareness Week.
Yeah.
Part of our disability community, a number of us on the committee are MS people, and so let's celebrate it. And again, go to your representatives and let them know it's MS Awareness Week. Lewis, it's MS Awareness Week. Put it in the post, please.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I just want to make one last comment. I want you to know that the AAC soon will be having their 2016 recruitment for new members. So that information will be coming out pretty soon. Those members who are up for re-election, I'll be sending you an email giving you information on how to reapply if you're interested in reapplying and moving forward. If you have any questions, you can contact me, but you'll see that information soon. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Yeah.
One last question for Denise, who will ask me this question tomorrow, is will there be a member of the AAC involved in the recruitment?
No.
Will there be a member of the AAC involved in the recruitment?
No.
You heard that subject.
She said no.
No, she said no.
Is there no way that could happen?
No.
Okay. All right, do I have a motion to adjourn? Do I have a second?
Second.